MakingAScene.org presents a deep dive on how you can collect all your royalty payments.
It sounds pretty straightforward, doesn't it? But for indie artists, the reality is, well, it's a lot more complicated. Your money, the cash you've actually earned, it's kind of scattered everywhere, sitting in different accounts with different organizations, basically waiting for you to track it down and prove it's yours.
Right. And that's really our mission today, isn't it? To cut through all that mess.
Yeah.
We've looked at the sources, and they all point to the same thing. Just putting your music out isn't enough. If you don't follow through with all the, you know, the registration steps, a huge chunk of your income just vanishes. It gets lost in the system.
Yeah. But the good news, and this is important, is that the money is there. It's waiting. So what we want to do is give you a really clear step-by-step roadmap to actually find it. And we're not just talking about the old school paper forms either. We're going to bring in how new tech, things like AI and Web3, can actually help automate a lot of this stuff, make it less overwhelming.
Okay, but before we jump into the how-to, maybe we should tackle the why. Like, why is it set up this way? Why doesn't Spotify, say, just send you one check that covers everything for a stream?
That's a great question. It boils down to basically a data problem, a big systemic data issue that comes from old copyright laws, really. See, every way your music earns money, a stream, a radio play, maybe a TV show, it flows through different pipes, different organizations, because they represent different legal rights. And if your name or the song title or, crucially, the ID codes aren't perfectly matched up in every single one of those systems, well, the money just gets stuck, or it sits in a big unclaimed pool.
And that pool isn't safe, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't just sit there forever with your name on it.
Exactly. That's the scary part. If money sits unclaimed for, say, a few years, the timeline varies a bit, it can end up in what's called the black box. Then it gets redistributed. Usually it goes to the biggest players, the major publishers and labels, based on their overall market share. So if you wait too long, poof, it's gone for good.
Wow. Okay. That definitely adds some urgency. So let's get into it. What's the absolute bedrock concept artists need to grasp about how music money works?
The most fundamental thing, number one, is realizing that every song you release is actually two things. Two separate assets, legally and financially, and they both earn their own money.
Two assets. Okay, walk us through that. What are they?
Okay, asset one, the composition. This is the song itself, you know. The lyrics, the melody, the chords, the intellectual property. This asset pays the songwriters and the music publishers.
Got it. The song idea. And asset two.
Asset two. The sound reporting.
Right.
Or the master. This is the actual audio file you hear. The specific performance that was recorded. This asset pays the performers on the track and whoever owns the master recording, which might be a label, or for indie artists, often it's you.
Okay, so here's the critical point for you, the listener. If you write your own songs and you record them yourself, you're entitled to get paid from both sides. Composition side and the recording side. But only if you register both correctly. Miss one, and you're literally leaving cash on the table, maybe half of it.
Precisely. You almost need to think of yourself as running a small business with two main products or two divisions that both generate income.
Right. A mental shift. Okay, so let's start building this financial foundation. Where's the first place the money trail begins after you release a track? Step one.
Step one is your distributor. You know, companies like DistroKid, TuneCore, CD Baby, they're your first stop. Their main job is getting your actual recording onto the platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, all those, and then collecting the royalties paid for playing that sound recording. That's the master side royalty from streams.
Okay, so the distributor handles the recording side of streaming money. But you said there are two assets. What about the composition side for that same stream?
Exactly. That distributor check doesn't cover the composition. Which brings us to step two, your performing rights organization, or PRO. Think ASCAP, BMI in the US, or SOCAN in Canada, PRS in the UK, and so on. They collect money when your composition is performed publicly.
Publicly meaning, like radio, TV, live shows, even background music in bars.
Yep, all of that. Radio spins, TV placements, playing your songs at a gig, even when it's playing over the speakers in a coffee shop, that's all public performance of the composition.
Now, the sources we looked at really hammered home a crucial point about PROs that a lot of artists miss.
Oh, absolutely. This is huge. You must register with your PRO as both a songwriter and as a publisher. If you only sign up as a songwriter, you'll get the songwriter share, which is typically 50% of the performance royalty.
And the other 50%, the publisher share.
It just sits there. The PRO collects it, but they don't know who to send it to unless a publisher is registered and claims it.
So even if it's just you, You need to basically invent a publishing company name for yourself, you know, My Awesome Songs Publishing or whatever, and register that name as the publisher with your PRO.
Exactly. It sounds like a small bureaucratic step, but it literally doubles the performance royalty income you receive from the PRO. It's probably the single most common way new artists leave money behind.
Okay. Distributor for the master stream royalty, PRO for the composition performance royalty. Now let's circle back to streaming because you mentioned it's complicated. Why does a single stream generate another royalty besides the one the distributor collects?
Right. This is step three. The MLC, which stands for the Mechanical Licensing Collective, it's a US-based thing, mainly. Legally, when Spotify or Apple Music streams your song, they're doing two things simultaneously. They're publicly performing the sound recording, that's what the distributor gets paid for, but they're also reproducing the underlying composition, making a temporary copy.
Ah, okay. And that act of reproduction, that copy, triggers a different kind of royalty.
Correct. That's called a mechanical royalty. Historically, this was for things like pressing CDs or vinyl, making a mechanical copy. The law adapted it for streaming. So, the MLC was set up in the U.S. specifically to collect these mechanical royalties from streaming services for the composition owners. Your distributor gets the master money. The MLC gets the composition's mechanical money from streams.
And joining the MLC is free.
Totally free. And essential if you want that streaming mechanical money. If you're not registered, again, that money is just sitting there, collected but unpaid.
And here's another actionable tip from the source material. The MLC actually has a public database. I think it's called the Unmatched Works Database.
That's right. You can go on their website and search for your songs, especially older ones. You might find unclaimed royalties waiting because maybe the metadata wasn't quite right when it was first released years ago. It's worth checking.
Okay, so nailing down those three, distributor, PRO, as both writer and publisher, and the MLC that builds your core royalty collection system.
That's your foundation. Yep. But now, let's talk about what I often think of as the hidden gold mine, something so many new artists completely overlook, sound exchange.
Right, sound exchange. This shifts back to the sound recording side of things, but it's not the standard streaming payment we discussed. It's different. What exactly are they collecting?
Sound exchange handles digital performance royalties for the sound recording, specifically from non-interactive digital radio services. Think SiriusXM, Pandora radio stations, iHeartRadio's digital streams, cable TV music channels.
Non-interactive meaning you can't pick the specific song like a radio station.
Exactly. You're listening to a curated stream, and the way they pay is fundamentally different and potentially much more lucrative than Spotify or Apple Music.
Yeah, I remember seeing some figures in the research that were, well, they were pretty eye-opening.
They can be, because unlike Spotify's tiny fraction of a cent per stream, services like SiriusXM pay based on the number of listeners for each performance.
Wait, say that again? Per listener.
Per listener, per spin. So if your song gets played once on a popular SiriusXM channel, and let's say 100,000 people are tuned in at that exact moment.
That's not one payment.
It's essentially 100,000 tiny payments generated by that single spin. We've genuinely seen indie artists go from making almost nothing on streaming to getting quarterly sound exchange checks for hundreds, even thousands of dollars just from getting decent airplay on one of these digital radio platforms.
That is, wow. Okay, that's a massive potential income stream if your track finds the right home there. Mm. How does Sound Exchange divide up that money?
It's split very clearly into three buckets by U.S. law. 50% goes to the rights owner of the sound recording. That's usually the label, or you, if you're independent. 45% goes to the featured artist, the main performer credited on the track. And the remaining 5% goes to non-featured performers. These are your session musicians, backing vocalists, the orchestra members, anyone who played on the recording but wasn't the main named artist.
Okay, so if you're the main artist and you own your masters, you absolutely need to register with Sound Exchange twice, essentially. Once as the featured artist and again as the rights owner.
Correct. You use your ISRC code, that's the unique identifier for your recording that your distributor provides, to claim your tracks in their online portal under both roles.
And that 5% for non-featured performers? That seems really significant for session players.
It is, and this is crucial. Even if you were paid a flat fee, like a session fee, to play guitar or sing backup vocals on a song years ago, you are still legally entitled to collect this 5% share every single time that song gets played on these digital radio services for the life of the copyright.
So that baseline you laid down in 1995 could still be generating checks for you today from Sound Exchange totally separate from what you were paid for the session itself.
Absolutely. It's passive income based on the song's continued performance. But, and here's the catch again.
Let me guess. Unclaimed money.
You got it. If you, as a session player, don't register with Sound Exchange and claim those recordings, that 5% sits there. And just like the other unclaimed pots, after a certain period, usually a few years, it gets redistributed and it's lost to you. Time is literally money here.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground in the U.S. system. Let's broaden the scope. What about money from places like YouTube, TikTok, or international plays?
Good point. Next up is getting paid when your music is used in online videos. This is handled through Content ID, which you usually set up via your distributor.
This is that system that kind of automatically scans YouTube and other platforms.
Exactly. It uses audio fingerprinting to find videos that contain your music, even short clips in, like a fan's vacation video or a TikTok dance. It then places an ad on that video or collects a share of the revenue and sends micropayments back to you. Super important in the age of viral content.
Makes sense. And building on that Sound Exchange idea, is there an international version for radio and public plays outside the U.S.?
Yes, definitely. That falls under the umbrella of neighboring rights. It's essentially the international equivalent of Sound Exchange royalties, but often covers a broader range of uses like broadcast radio, TV, and even music played in public spaces like shops, gyms, bars overseas. Different countries have different collection societies like PPL in the U.K., ReSound in Canada. If you have listeners outside the U.S., you likely have neighboring rights royalties waiting for you. You often need to work with a specialized company or administrator to collect these globally.
Okay, and then there's the one everyone dreams about, the big payout. Sync licensing, getting your song placed in a movie, TV show, video game, or commercial.
Ah, yes, sync. That can be the real jackpot. And it usually pays you in two ways. First, you get an upfront sync fee just for the permission to use the song. That can range from a few hundred dollars to, you know, tens or even hundreds of thousands for major placements. And second, every time that movie or TV show airs or the commercial runs, it also generates performance royalties for the composition, which get paid out through your PRO. So it's an upfront fee plus ongoing back-end royalties.
How do artists even get considered for sync?
You need to be proactive. Get your music organized with metadata. Have instrumental versions ready. You can pitch directly to music supervisors or use platforms like Songtrad or specialized sync agents that pitch your music for you.
Got it. And one last, maybe simpler, traditional income stream that artists sometimes forget.
Live shows. If you're performing your original songs live, you need to submit your set list to your PRO after every single gig.
Why is that?
Because most venues pay what's called a blanket license fee to the PROs, allowing them to have music perform there legally. By submitting your set list, you're telling your PRO, hey, my songs were part of what that license paid for, and you get your share of those performance royalties. It's money you earned just by playing the show. Don't leave it behind.
Okay, this is a lot of different organizations, codes, registrations. It feels overwhelming. Yeah. The sources suggested technology, especially AI, is starting to help manage this complexity.
Absolutely. AI is becoming a game changer for handling the sheer volume of data and, frankly, the tediousness of it all. Think about it. AI tools can now do things like audio fingerprinting services like PEX or Audu to scan the internet and even physical spaces to find where your specific recording is being used, often places you wouldn't even know about.
So it's like automated music detection.
Pretty much. And other AI tools, like Music's Match Pro, for example, can help manage and verify your metadata, lyrics, credits, codes across tons of different global databases. It can flag inconsistencies or tell you, hey, it looks like your registration is missing for this territory or this type of royalty.
Could an artist even use, say, something like ChatGPT to help organize this?
For sure. You could use it to build a custom spreadsheet, like a personalized royalty checklist or a Sound Exchange claim tracker tailored specifically to your catalog and the steps you need to take. It helps structure the chaos.
This brings us back to something you mentioned earlier, the critical importance of the data itself, metadata mastery.
Yes. This cannot be stressed enough. It's the absolute linchpin for getting paid correctly. You need to be obsessive about three main codes. The ISRC, which is the unique code for your sound recording. You get this from your distributor. The ISWC, which is the unique code for your composition. You usually get this from your PRO after registering the song. And the UPC, or barcode, for the overall release, like the album or EP.
And the golden rule here is?
They must be identical and perfectly accurate everywhere. every single place you register your music, your distributor, your PRO, the MLC, Sound Exchange, any neighboring rights agent, content ID systems, the spelling of your name, the song title, and especially those codes have to match exactly.
Because even one typo
means the systems can't connect the dots. The money goes into that unclaimed black box. It sounds finicky, but doing a yearly audit of your core metadata across all platforms, it's just smart business practice now. It's like checking the foundations of your house.
Okay, we've covered the traditional, albeit complex, systems and how AI helps manage them. Let's look further into the future now. What about Web3, blockchain, NFTs? How does that change the game for music royalties?
Web3 represents a potential paradigm shift, moving towards more direct artist-to-fan relationships and cutting out many of the traditional middlemen. Platforms are emerging, think Audius, Catalog, Royal.io, that use blockchain technology and smart contracts. What this means, practically, is often faster, even instant payments, directly to the artist when their music is streamed or purchased on the platform. The transactions are transparently recorded on the blockchain, and the artist typically keeps a much higher percentage of the revenue, sometimes like 90% or even 100%, compared to the tiny fractions from traditional streaming.
And this also allows for things like fans buying NFTs or shares in a song, right? Mm-hmm. Like direct investment.
Exactly. It opens up new models where fans can have a form of ownership or direct financial stake in the music they love, creating a deeper connection and a more direct revenue stream for the artist. It bypasses a lot of the old, complex royalty chains we've been discussing.
So it's about creating your own financial ecosystem, almost.
That's a great way to put it. You leverage AI to manage the complexities of the existing system, and you explore Web3 for more direct, transparent, and potentially more lucrative connections with your audience.
Wow. Okay, we have gone through an incredible amount of information here, from basic definitions to cutting-edge tech. If you had to boil it down, what's the single biggest takeaway for an artist listening right now?
I think the biggest shift is realizing that the music business, while still complex, isn't this impenetrable fortress anymore, especially not for indie artists. The tools exist now. You have to start viewing your music not just as your art, but also as a financial asset, a valuable one. And like any asset, it requires setting up the right systems, managing the data diligently, and staying informed. Keep organized logs, use the tech available, make royalty collection an active part of your career, not an afterthought.
And maybe one final immediate action step someone could take right after listening.
Yes. Go search the unclaimed royalty databases. Seriously, check the MLC's public database. Check Sound Exchange's search if you've played on tracks. Look at general unclaimed property sites like unclaimedroyalties.com. You might find money from years ago just sitting there waiting for you to file some simple paperwork. It's found money. The bottom line is, take control. The information's out there. The tools are improving. It's time to claim everything you've rightfully earned.
Don't forget to check out the other great articles and resources on makingascene.org, the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them.